Returning Home, August 1909. "Grandpa, I love your stories about Ben the Cooper and his Uncle Alex," says Phil. "The spyglass you gave me, did that really belong to Ben? Was he really my great-great-grandfather? Is there really an Old North Church? Where did Paul Revere live? Once you've answered those, I have 100 more questions." "Phil, I'm happy you like my stories. I believe we can answer many of your questions by returning home for a few days." "Returning home?" asks Phil. "Home to Naugatuck?" Grandpa Ben laughs. "Returning home to the place I left over 50 years ago. Why, returning home to Boston, of course." Phil jumps up. "Can we really go to Boston? When, Grandpa, when? How would we get there?" "Well, Phil, if I can convince your parents, we can go in a few weeks. I'll mail them a letter tomorrow asking for their permission. We could take the train from Waterbury to South Station in Boston. We'd be there in about 4 hours." Phil is so excited. As if going to Boston isn't enough, he has never been on a train either. This would be a real adventure. "I hope you can convince my parents, Grandpa," says Phil. I hope. Over the next 10 days, Phil does his chores around the farm and dreams of a trip to Boston. He gathers eggs for his Grandma Mary and puts hay in the barn for the horses. Phil loves horses, and he loves the Edwards farm. On the evening of Thursday, August 19th, Phil's grandma tells him that a letter arrived from his parents a few days earlier. His grandpa has been keeping it a secret. Grandpa Ben has a big smile on his face. Phil knows that smile can only mean one thing: permission granted. He gives his grandfather a big hug and then asks, "How soon can we go?" Grandpa Ben says, "We'll leave for your house in Naugatuck tomorrow morning and then catch an early morning train for Boston on Saturday. Now, Phil, I received your parents' permission to take you, but only for the weekend. We'll be taking the train back on Sunday afternoon. Get a good night's sleep tonight, because we'll be up tomorrow at the crack of dawn." "Will we be taking your horse and buggy to Naugatuck?" "That we will," says Grandpa Ben, who then bids his grandson good night and closes the door to Phil's room. Phil liked riding in the horse and buggy, but secretly he wished there was a faster way to get home. For now, he lies in bed in his room on the top floor of the farmhouse. Through his spyglass, he can see the stars out his bedroom window. He begins to count them. 1, 2, 3, 46 stars can be seen in the night sky. Phil thinks, that's one for each of the 46 states. Then he notices a single golden star. He had seen this star before. Surely it was a sign of the future, but what did it mean? He wonders for a while, but is soon sound asleep. Each morning, without fail, Phil awakes to the crow of the farm's giant rooster. On Friday morning, August 20th, he doesn't hear that crow. Instead, he hears a noise that sounds like a horn. Phil's grandfather soon enters his room and says, "Rise and shine, Phil. Our ride has arrived." "Ride?" asks Phil. "What ride?" Peeking out his window, Phil cannot believe his eyes. In front of the farmhouse is an automobile, a 1909 Model T Ford, all shined up and ready to transport them to Naugatuck. A minute later, there is a knock at the door, and Grandpa Ben greets his guest. Phil dashes downstairs, and his grandfather makes the introduction. "Phil, this is my neighbor, Bill Jones. Bill, this is my grandson, Phil." Bill extends his hand and says, "Good morning, Phil. Are you ready for your first ride in an automobile?" "Ready," responds Phil. "Am I ever?" He races out the front door to take a closer look. "It's beautiful, Mr. Jones," he exclaims. "When can we go?" Within 10 minutes, all three are seated in the Model T, with Phil in the back seat. Suddenly, Phil jumps out and runs back into the farmhouse. A moment later, he is back, clutching his spyglass. He turns to his grandfather and says, "I almost forgot this, Grandpa." The trip to Naugatuck by horse and buggy would take the better part of a day. In the Model T, they will be there in half that time. Over the rutted dirt roads, they travel at speeds between 10 and 15 miles per hour. Bill begins the conversation. "It's nice to finally meet you, Phil. Your grandfather talks about you all the time. I don't recall him mentioning your age. How old are you?"
"I'm 14, says Phil.
"Ah, to be 14 years old again," responds Bill as he winks at Grandpa Ben. "What would you like to do with your life, son?"
"I'm not sure I understand your question," says Phil.
"What I mean is, what type of job would you like to have in the future? What excites you? What interests you?"
"I like many things," says Phil. "I like fishing with my friends and working around my grandpa's farm. I like horses. I like to play football. And I like children."
"That's a good start," says Bill. "You could be a farmer like your grandpa, or drive a horse-drawn wagon for a local business. You could be a school teacher, or maybe even president of the United States, like Mr. Roosevelt or Mr. Taft. You could be anything you set your mind to be, Phil. Just let your imagination take you there. Set a goal for yourself and never give up on it." Phil grins and says, "I never thought of it that way, Mr. Jones. I guess if I use my imagination, set a goal, and work hard, I can do almost anything."
"Right you are, son," says Bill.
"What's that you have in your hand, Phil?"
"It's my spyglass. Grandpa gave it to me. He says it came from Boston and once belonged to his grandfather. I use it to look at things around the farm, and I wanted to be sure to take it to Boston so I can get a close-up view of the city."
"Sounds like a fine idea to me," says Bill. By mid-afternoon, the Model T reaches the Edwards home in the Millville section of Naugatuck. Phil's parents are there to greet them. Bill will stay for the evening and drive Grandpa Ben and Phil to the train station in the early morning. Phil's mother prepares a wonderful meal, which everyone enjoys. The weary travelers agree that food has never tasted so good. After a good night's sleep, Phil, his grandpa, and Bill Jones are up at 6:30 a.m. on Saturday, August 21st, to drive to Waterbury's Union Station. The train departs for Boston's South Station at 8:30 a.m. As the Model T nears Union Station,
Grandpa Ben notices the railroad building's impressive brick tower.
The tower stands 240 feet high, and its face features a clock with a 16-foot dial. It is the largest tower clock in New England, and one of the largest in the United States. Phil notices that the time is just past 8 a.m. Bill parks the Model T just outside the station, and Grandpa Ben and Phil take their one small suitcase from the automobile. They thank Bill for all his help, and soon he is on his way back home. Phil and his grandpa enter the station and step into the impressive waiting room. Just last month, on July 11th, Union Station had opened to the public, and everything about it is new, fresh, and clean. From the high ceiling hang three large cast-iron chandeliers. Three large windows are positioned on each side of the waiting room. The tile floor is covered with high-backed waiting chairs. Grandpa Ben and Phil walk to the ticket office, which is just opposite the main entrance. Before them are three ticket windows with fancy brass fronts and marble cash counters. Here, Grandpa Ben purchases two tickets to Boston. The time is now 8:20 a.m. Soon, the cry of "All aboard for Hartford and Boston" is heard, and the two excited passengers board the train. Phil and his grandfather take their seats inside the passenger car. As the steam train pulls out of the station, its whistle blows as if to announce the start of their adventure. From the window near his seat, Phil soon watches the landscape speed by at 40 miles per hour. "I'm so excited, Grandpa. I can't wait to get there," he says. "Can you tell me some of the family stories again? Maybe it will make the time go by faster."
"Sure I can, Phil. You'll recall I never have a problem telling a good story. I know I've told you about the sea captain and my grandfather Ben, the cooper, and his uncle Alex and the Sons of Liberty. Perhaps I can tell you more about some of the other family members. Ben's sister, Sally, married Paul Revere Jr., as you know, and they had quite a few children, I believe at least 10. Ben's cousin, Betsy, married Jedediah Lincoln. He was descended from Samuel Lincoln of Hingham, Massachusetts,
a small town 20 miles south of Boston.
President Abraham Lincoln was also descended from Samuel Lincoln. When Betsy died in 1796, Jedediah Lincoln remarried to Mary Revere, daughter of Paul Revere. His brother, Amos Lincoln, who participated in the Boston Tea Party, also married one of Paul Revere's daughters, Deborah, and later her sister, Elizabeth. Since the topic at hand was the Lincoln family, Phil took the opportunity to impress his grandfather. "Grandpa, I tried to memorize President Lincoln's speech that you showed me recently. Would you like to hear it?"
"The Gettysburg Address?"
"Yes, Grandpa. We'll be studying the Civil War in school come September. I'll be in the 7th grade, and I thought it would be good to learn it."
"Let's hear what you've memorized."
67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal." Phil is able to get partway through the speech before forgetting what comes next. Grandpa Ben is pleased with the effort. He writes down the lines that Phil has missed and then replies, "It's impressive to memorize such a speech, but even more important to understand its meaning. Do you understand what President Lincoln is talking about?"
"I'm not really sure," answers Phil.
At a time of crisis, Lincoln is recalling the ideals that this nation was founded upon. The Founding Fathers established these ideals and wrote them in the Declaration of Independence, the belief in human equality, the belief that this experiment in self-government called the United States of America could succeed. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, as Lincoln described them, fought for that belief. Today, Phil, we are traveling to Boston to see where the road to freedom began. The new birth of freedom that President Lincoln predicted in the Gettysburg Address would not be possible without the sacrifice of many, including the men he honored that day. Grandpa Ben hands Phil a piece of paper containing the lines he had forgotten. Now you can memorize it and understand it, too. Phil wasn't able to follow his grandfather's explanation completely, but it certainly did make him think.
"Thank you, Grandpa," he replied.
As the train pulls into South Station, the time is nearing 1 p.m. The station itself was completed at the turn of the century, and at that time was the world's largest. Grandpa Ben and Phil leave the train and walk out the front entrance of the station. They find themselves on the corner of Summer Street and Atlantic Avenue, an area known to Bostonians as Dewey Square. Grandpa Ben grew up in Boston, and although many years have passed, he still has a good sense for which direction they should travel in. The day is cloudy, and it looks as if it might rain.
"I wish the weather were a bit brighter," says Grandpa Ben.
"It will be," says Phil.
The sun will be out soon, Grandpa. I'm certain of it.
Grandpa Ben laughs, recalling the many times that his grandson's predictions have come true.
Phil peers at the buildings in the city through his spyglass. He is amazed by what he sees.
He and his grandpa walk down Summer Street and then Winter Street until they reach the intersection
with Tremont Street.
Here, Grandpa Ben sees something that certainly wasn't here when he was a boy. It wasn't built until 1897.
Before them, on the corner of Park and Tremont Streets, is the Park Street subway station.
Grandpa, what's this? Asks Phil.
It's the subway, Phil. It's an underground train that goes to other parts of the city.
A train? Underground? Can we go on it? Please, Grandpa, can we?
Grandpa Ben asks a man if the subway will take them toward the North End. The answer is yes. He then follows his grandson down a flight of stairs, purchases two tickets, and their adventure continues.
Phil loves the subway ride. I can't wait to tell my parents that I rode on a train underground, he says.
The subway train travels a short distance and takes them to North Station. When the travelers exit the train and continue their journey, they find themselves on Causeway Street. Here, Grandpa Ben and Phil walk north toward Commercial Street and eventually take a right on Hull Street. To their left is the entrance to Copse Hill Burying Ground. Grandpa Ben shows his grandson the slate marker that reads, Captain Benjamin Edwards' tomb.
This is the family tomb. The sea captain is here, and so is Uncle Alex. Ben, the cooper, his sister Sally, and his cousin Betsy.
Members of the Revere and Lincoln families, who are related to the Edwards family through marriage, also rest here. They include Paul Revere Jr. and Jedediah Lincoln. For the first time, Phil is seeing proof that his grandfather's stories are true. Grandpa Ben reaches into his pocket and pulls out a small scrap of wood. He places the piece of wood on top of the marker.
Now, that's something I haven't done since my father took me here when I was a child, he says.
Why did you put that piece of wood on top of the marker, Grandpa? Asks Phil.
It's a family tradition, he says, a way to leave proof of our visit.
Phil finds a twig nearby and places it next to Grandpa Ben's item on top of the slate marker.
I want my ancestors to know that I was here, too, he says.
Grandpa Ben smiles and then adds, Follow me.
They walk to the other end of the burying ground to view a marker leaning up against the wall.
This is the marker of Robert Newman. I've mentioned his name to you before.
Paul Revere asked Robert Newman and John Pulling to hold two lanterns in a window of the old North Church steeple to warn the Sons of Liberty in Charlestown. John Pulling is also buried here.
Is there really an old North Church, Grandpa?
There certainly is, he replies. As they leave the burying ground, Grandpa Ben points down Hull Street and says, Here it is.
Phil views the steeple through his spyglass.
Below the steeple, there is a plaque. Grandpa Ben reads the words on this plaque out loud.
The signal lanterns of Paul Revere, displayed in the steeple of this church, April 18, 1775, warn the country of the march of the British troops to Lexington and Concord.
Grandpa, can we go inside?
I believe we can, Phil. Let's walk down and take a look.
Phil is too excited to walk, so he runs as fast as he can down the paved stone street that leads to the church.
Finding the door open, he steps inside. Phil notices two brass chandeliers that hang above the central aisle. He counts 12 candles on each of them.
Soon, his grandfather joins him.
When my grandfather lived in Boston, they called this wonderful building Christ Church. Today, most folks call it the Old North Church. Can we climb into the steeple, Grandpa?
I don't believe we have time for that, Phil. We have so many other places to visit. Didn't you say you wanted to see where Paul Revere lived?
I would like that, says Phil.
Maybe tomorrow we can climb the steeple. They walk a few blocks to North Square, where the Revere home is located. It had recently been restored and was opened to the public on April 18, 1908. As they reach the home, Grandpa Ben starts to laugh.
"What's so funny, Grandpa?" asks Phil.
"It seems you're right again, Phil. About the weather, that is." The sky has begun to clear, and an area of sunlight can be seen just ahead of them.
"I saw that yesterday through the spyglass you gave me. I'm seeing more things through it each day. I'm just not sure what they all mean."
Grandpa Ben knocks at the front door of the Revere home, and a gentleman soon opens it. He takes their admission and invites them in. They walk into the living room, where they see a gate-leg table, a colonial highboy dresser, and portraits of Paul and Rachel Revere. Fancy wallpaper covers the walls. Beyond the living room, in the kitchen, they view a fireplace with tools for cooking, a spinning wheel, and a cradle for a small child. They walk upstairs and enter Paul Revere's bedchamber. Phil asks his grandfather a question.
"Grandpa, is that Paul Revere's real bed? Is that the way he left it?"
Grandpa Ben chuckles and then responds, "I don't know the answer to that, Phil. Perhaps we'll meet someone who does."
"Did he leave from here for his midnight ride?"
A woman standing in the background overhears them and answers the question before Phil's grandfather can.
"Yes, he did. He left from the front door of this very home on the evening of April 18th, 1775. I'm pleased to see that the younger generation has such an interest in American history. When I see that interest, it makes me happy that we restored this home. Let me introduce myself. My name is Pauline Revere Thayer."
Grandpa Ben and Phil introduce themselves.
"My father, Paul Joseph Revere, was Paul Revere's grandson. He was a patriot, very much like his grandfather. He fought in the Civil War," says Pauline.
"In the Civil War?" says Phil.
"Yes, he was a member of the 20th Massachusetts Volunteer Infantry. He fought at Gettysburg."
"Gettysburg!" exclaims Phil.
"My, you do have an interest in American history.
Wait for just a moment. There's something I'd like to show you." Pauline soon returns, holding a book in her right hand. The green cover is imprinted in gold with the words Revere Memorial.
Pauline opens the book to page 182 and prepares to read a passage.
"My father wrote this letter to my mother in 1863, when I was 16 months old.
Thursday, July 2nd. We marched yesterday to near Gettysburg, and this morning moved to the rear of the town. There seems a prospect of an engagement. In case one should occur, we all hope it may be a general one, as, from the position of the armies, it seems it must prove decisive. For myself, I feel that God will order what is best for us all. May He bless you and our dear children and all at home. I received Josie's letter yesterday with our dear little heart's photograph. He looks quite like a man and old enough to take care of his mama. Tell him I say so and shall depend on his doing so. P.J.R.
"I would like to meet your father someday," says Phil. "I am very interested in the Civil War. May I write to him?"
"My father, Colonel Paul Joseph Revere, was badly wounded at Gettysburg the same day he wrote the letter I have just read. He died 2 days later, on July 4th, moments after hearing the news of the Union victory. His brother, Edward,
had died 10 months earlier at the Battle of Antietam.
"I'm very sorry," says Phil, bowing his head. Before Pauline closes the book, she shows Phil the first page, which reads, "A Memorial of Paul Joseph Revere and Edward H.R. Revere." The book was printed in Boston in 1874. Phil thinks for a moment and then asks Pauline an unusual question.
"Mrs. Thayer, did your father have a spyglass?"
Pauline looks surprised.
"It's interesting that you should ask that, Phil," she says. "My father did carry a pair of field glasses, binoculars, with him during the war. Perhaps that is what you are referring to. He used them at Gettysburg. After his death, they were given to Lieutenant Colonel Pearson of the 39th Massachusetts. He was wearing them in a battle near Laurel Hill, Virginia, in 1864, when he was hit by an artillery shell fragment. The field glasses were badly damaged when he was struck. The lieutenant colonel always felt those field glasses saved his life." Grandpa Ben continues the conversation with Pauline, mentioning the family's relation to Sally Edwards, who married Paul Revere Jr., and telling other tales of his Boston ancestors. When they bid goodbye, Pauline thanks Grandpa Ben and Phil for visiting and adds, "Please come again soon." After Phil and his grandfather leave, they eat supper
and then get a room at the Parker House.
On Sunday, August 22nd, they walk through the market at Faneuil Hall and view the balcony of the old State House before taking the train back to Waterbury. On the train, Phil thinks of his conversation with Pauline Revere Thayer. Her father was one of the brave men that President Lincoln wrote about in his address. Phil is deep in thought when his grandfather interrupts him.
"How's that speech coming along, Phil?"
Phil, once again, tries to deliver President Lincoln's address. This time, he gets further than his first attempt. His grandfather says,
"Well done, Phil. That type of progress deserves some kind of reward."
Reaching into his pocket, he pulls out a handful of change. Among the Indian head cents, there is a new penny with a picture of Abraham Lincoln on it.
It was just released on August 2nd.
In celebration of the Lincoln Centennial, the 100th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's birth, he gives Phil the 1909 Lincoln cent and says, "Keep up the good work." Phil admires the shiny new coin. It is the first to contain the image of a U.S. president. Over Lincoln's head, Phil notices the words, "In God We Trust," and to Lincoln's left, he spots the word, "Liberty." Phil says, "Thank you, Grandpa, and thanks for taking me to Boston, too. Your stories that I've listened to for so many years mean more to me now than ever." As the train chugs along and the weekend adventure comes to a close, Grandpa Ben turns to his grandson and says, "Now that you know the people and places in my stories are real, there's something special I have to show you."
"What is it?" asks Phil.
"I'll bring it with me the next time I visit you. I keep it in a closet back at the farmhouse."
"I can't wait for your next visit."
As the train heads back to Waterbury, Grandpa Ben, the storyteller, says,
"Have I ever told you this one, Phil?"